Welcome to Season 7 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Daniel Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
Enchanted Ivy is now available at allplay.com. Take on the role of Ivy, the courageous new owner of a magical inn. Build your bewitching B&B to best suit your eccentric guests while cultivating the ivy covering your walls. Each turn, carefully place each card in a grid. Assign guests, noting their preferences, things like diagonally adjacent, same row, surrounded, etc., to score them at the end of the game. In story mode, earn rewards for meeting point goals and completing unique challenges. Check this one out. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 147, Lava Run. Today, we are joined by Louis Loop, who is a professional crocheter, game designer, and a content creator. Super excited to have you on the podcast.
Wow. It's just really cool to be here.
Yeah. I'm glad I got to talk to you at Origins. Or no, it wasn't Origins. It was Gamma Expo. The two of them get confused in my brain.
Yeah. You were at a table and I was telling the partner that you were with about my story. And without a beat, you were like, I'd like to talk to you more. I was like, okay, hell yeah, let's talk.
I was like, this is interesting. Come on my podcast. Yeah. I think you're talking to either Unai or Josh at the Tabletop Gamer booth. I'm a huge fan of working that at shows.
Yeah, that was my first show. I mean, we're going to get into it, but I am relatively fresh to the game design sphere. And so that was my first time going to a show. And my gosh, was it intimidating. Not necessarily in a bad way, but like in a, wow, this world's way bigger than I kind of thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, what got you into designing games?
I mean, I've been designing games since I was a kid. I used to draw like my own card games when I was, you know, like 8 or something. And I always played this game called New Game, is what I call it. I'm sure I didn't invent it, but I made it up. So I don't know. The idea is you make a game within 30 minutes, either by yourself or with a friend, and you have a board or components or something. And then you play that game, and then you immediately try to make a secondary game using the exact same components that is distinctly different than the first game. And that's called New Game. So whenever I was a kid, that was what me and my friends kind of did. And even as an adult, that's what I did. And now I have some games that I built using that system. But yeah, it is strange how I got into game design, because I've always kind of been designing games, but I never really thought I was going to make that part of my job. A lot of people in my life never thought that I was going to make the thing that is my job into my job, which is crocheting.
Yeah, honestly, I can't even imagine what a professional crocheter even looks like. I mean, I've seen your face, but what does that mean?
So I've been crocheting as a career, or like professional designer, for nearly 20 years. I think this year will be my 20th year designing.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. I started in high school. I started selling my crochet, and then I realized that I would make like beanies and stuff. I taught myself how to crochet online, and then I realized that if I really wanted to make this a job, which I did really early on, that there was kind of a cap. I could only really sell so many things that I had physically crocheted. But if I made the designs and started teaching people how to crochet, then I kind of could put out a bunch of little fishing lines out there. I don't know. It just grew and grew. And then I started my company, Club Crochet, this year will be 10 years. Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. So my company, Club Crochet, is going to be around for 10 years this November, which is wild. I like to say it's a subscription service for crocheters, but it's not really. I mean, it is and it isn't. You sign up for monthly patterns. Like, I try to come out with new patterns every few weeks, and that comes with like video tutorials. I do live crochet alongs. I do kits. And then I've had an epiphany maybe 2018, 2019. My wife saw all these little goblins that I crocheted, and I never was posting them online. And she was like, "You gonna do anything with these things?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's probably a good idea. I should probably do something with them because they're taking over our apartment." And then that night I came up with my first, I would say, official game. It's called Stitched War That You Craft. My pitch for that one is if Warhammer and the Muppets had a baby and it was all crocheted.
Okay. I love everything about that.
Very different. It's a complicated game. All the rules are online if anybody wants to look up Stitched. But that was kind of my introduction into like, oh, wow, I could actually use these things that I've always had put utility into all of my designs. I do like, I made a lot of beanies and things like that. But my real art is, they're kind of miniatures. They're about like, I don't know, like anywhere between 1 to 5 inches tall. And so just the realization that, oh my gosh, these are game pieces. And kind of like I could merge this thing that was my hobby and became my job into the thing that is my now hobby, which is game design. So it was kind of like turning, which probably was dangerous in the long term because now I have to find a new hobby. But I keep turning my hobbies into jobs, and it's a choice.
I mean, I can relate.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think mostly everybody that's listening to this probably can relate to that.
Yeah, or they're trying to.
Yeah, and it's hard. But I did find that, you know, we're just in a different world now where kind of any niche that you really are passionate about, you can make it a job. There's a lot of opportunities out there. And so I just got really into crochet really early. I was very good at it. I like to say, like, I'm really good at crocheting, but I'm extremely creative. So it was just a really good outlet for my creativity. And then because I was so early on in the crochet world, I had a foothold in the industry before the pandemic. And then the pandemic made crochet a completely different beast. It is now, I would say, probably like 15 times more popular than it was prior to the pandemic.
It is so fascinating the types of hobbies that shot up during COVID. That's like hiking it was fascinating, and plants and like DIY projects at home. There's just like a bunch of categories that like shot up.
Yeah. And crocheting definitely was one of them. And I felt very privileged to be in the situation where I could kind of capitalize, I suppose you could say, on that boom. Because I love it. I'm not into it. I mean, let's be honest. If I wanted to make a lot of money, I wouldn't have gotten into crochet. I got into it because I am extraordinarily passionate about the art. And so the fact that the art was exploding in that time meant that it was just really exciting. The opportunity finally hit.
I'm sure it's kind of validating too, that this thing that you enjoy, that you felt you were good at, was, you know, something that everyone else saw and thought it was amazing too.
Yeah, extremely validating. I remember when I was in high school, my dad said, he asked what I'm thinking about doing for a career. And I said, I think I want to crochet. And he said, oh, okay, you might want to think about something else just as like a backup. And after that conversation, I remember vividly thinking, well, now I really want to crochet for a living.
Oh, no.
And it totally like, it lit a fire under my butt in a weird way. Just like, being a teenager and being like, you can't tell me what to do. It was interesting because it kind of just like helped grow my passion for the thing that I was already passionate about. But yeah, we've gone so far into this and I haven't even talked about my game, which is so funny.
Yeah, but I mean, this is part of you and the creative outlet. And it's really cool because it involves, like, you can craft yourself your little game pieces for lava runs. So, I mean, let's shoot over. How were you inspired to create this adorable dinosaur game of lava? Which, funny enough, in this season, we will have two lava games with little dinos.
Really? What's the other lava game?
Uh-oh, Dino. That's the other one.
Oh, with Sabrina? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I met her at Gamma as well. She is so sweet. We've been emailing back and forth, actually. I want to crochet little Stegosaurus as, like, a component option for her game. And she was like, oh, my gosh, that would be so cool.
God, such a small industry.
It is. It really, especially when you get to a niche that's, like, dinosaur board games, you know?
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, let's talk about your dino game and what inspired you to make Lava Run.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't the first game I made. The first one I made was Stitched, and I always wanted to release that one, but it was just too complicated of a design to be my first official game in the world. The idea for the design for Lava Run came from one fateful night, I suppose you could say. I don't need to go into extreme details, but I was going viral on Reddit on an RAW subreddit, which would have been pretty big for me, you know, and I just posted a crocheted dinosaur there and just left it alone and then came back to it at like 4 a.m. It was removed. I was banned from the subreddit. I was muted from ever responding to the moderators. It was just basically an upsetting thing that happened to me, essentially, is all it needs to be. I have no idea why all this happened, but that doesn't really matter. The point was, I was seeing red, not red, but I was really upset. And it was like 4 a.m. and I didn't have my person to talk to. And I kind of had just a moment of realization that I kind of had two different options here. I could either be a little pissant on the internet and be rude for no reason and not feel better about myself, or I could try to convert this energy into something different. And I loved making games. So I was like, you know what? I'm converting this to I'm going to make a game right now. And then I think I probably had the idea of Lava Run floating in my head a little bit prior to that. But that night I made a prototype for the game. It was an all-nighter. My wife woke up in the morning and I was so excited to show her this thing that I made. And I had completely forgotten about this thing that upset me so thoroughly. And it just completely changed my perspective on my emotions and energy and what I can use. It just completely changed my whole perspective on life, honest, to be completely frank, of just like, oh, wow, I don't have to be mean. I don't have to be, or not mean, but I don't have to be angry about something that should make me angry. I can completely convert that into something else. And now to this day, I mean, I've tested this game so much. Still, the game is, I would say, 90% the same as that one night when I made it in blind inspiration. And yeah, I guess I should explain what the game is.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so. So the game, it's a dinosaur board game where you're helping a dinosaur escape a volcano. There's a volcanic eruption, and every turn you are gathering tiles. You have to play a certain amount of tiles on the board, which is, they're essentially like lava. So you're spreading the flow of lava and then also simultaneously moving down the volcano to try to escape the lava that you are spreading. So it kind of ends up being a bit of a mix of a puzzle-y game with a strategy game and a turn-based. It's very classic board gamey aspects to it too. You know, tile-based, very kind of has a bit of a Carcassonne vibe to it in that regard, because you're trying to line up a bunch of things. Designed for ages 7 and up, they take around, I don't know, 30 minutes probably per game, and you can play it solo, you can play it co-op, you can play it versus, which is the way I usually like to play it, where only one dinosaur can survive. There are other tiles that you get in the game that can help you out. You can get like jump tiles that help you move faster, or a boulder that you can use as a bridge or to place on another dinosaur's head to make them pass a turn. So it definitely has some competitive aspects to it, which I really like in board games.
Oh, I laughed when I saw the meteor title. I was like, what?
Yeah, everybody thinks, okay, game over. And I'm like, no, it's not game over. It's game makes the game really hard for one player. But it ends up being like that tile specifically feels a little bit like the blue shell in Super Mario, in you know, Mario Kart. It's like the great equalizer. And it will come up eventually if you keep playing. And then I guess I would say, like, for lack of a better term, gimmick of it all is it's a craftable game. It's my first official craftable game, which is a term that I'm using to describe these board games that I'm making that you can crochet your pieces. You don't have to, but that game, Lava Run, there is a crochet kit, of course, but there was also there was a clay kit, there was a building block kit, there was a needle felting kit. And the idea was you have a craft night, you make a dinosaur, and then you play this game where you're trying to keep that dinosaur alive. It's just so much fun to make your dinosaur first, and you're invested so much more in your dinosaur's survival.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you spent the time making it. It's like, that's my child. My child can't die via lava. I will kill your child instead.
Yeah. I mean, I love the game. I think it's simple. I really like making simple games in general, but it is a relatively simple game, but it has a modular additions to make it more and more complicated, so that, like, I play it with my wife and we are extremely competitive with each other, and it is not simple when we play the game, because we add in everything. Every dinosaur has a special ability, and there's all these other bonus tiles of tsunamis and tornadoes and stuff. I think the game is really, really good, to just be completely honest. I think I made a good one. Part of this industry that I've had probably the hardest time with is how publication works after the fact. I'm proud of what I made, but it's complicated. Like, after I ran a very successful backer kit for it, but like the aftermath of making a game is the part where I was like, oh, now I've got to, like, wait, so I published it by myself, so wait, how do I get into store? Oh, okay, now I need to learn about distribution, and should I reach out to publishers? And there's just so much of the monster under the covers that I did not realize, and I kind of jumped into. Not that I didn't do the research ahead of time, but I feel like you can only do so much research.
I think researching is different than actually being in it. And how did you decide to start adding in those, like, special tiles to go beyond just the Carcassonne feel of the lava flow going in different directions? So, like, for anyone who can't visually see this, it's like the tiles can make L's, straight paths, X's, flowing in whatever direction, and you have to continue it. You can't, like, break that lava flow. But then there's other fun ones. How did you decide on the fun extra tiles?
I think they were in, like, pretty much the initial creation of it, because I needed a level of, I needed a level of randomization chance that felt bigger than just tiles that fit together in different ways. And then I needed a something that gave more strategic choice in your game. So, like, these are big event tiles. I mean, the asteroid is pretty self-explanatory as far as, like, who has the power. The person that uses that asteroid tile, it's powerful. Essentially, what it does is if you place it on the board, you place it in between four squares and it gets rid of any of the lava in those squares. And then if any dinosaur is in that square, it sends them all the way back to the start. So it's extremely powerful. It's not powerful enough to win you the game, which was very important to me. I didn't want it to be like, okay, I won because I got the asteroid.
Oh yeah, because you don't want that chance.
Exactly, yeah. But it was just enough to kind of like, if someone did get really far ahead, it stopped them there. Or if they got really far ahead, they didn't really want, and they drew the asteroid, they didn't want to play it because it would kind of mess their own game up. So I guess that's where, to answer your question, it came from a desire of, I want more chaos, I want more luck and chance, and I want a comeback mechanic for people that are behind. So in the initial game, it was just the earthquake and the asteroid. And then I, you know, as every game designer does, come up with a billion more ideas instead of sleeping. And then it was like, okay, well, expansion. Expansion's going to be this, this, this. And I probably released the expansion in a terrible way. Now, no, looking back, I just kind of like was like, okay, if we hit high enough, we'll have an expansion too. And so I just made it and I just came out with it and stuff. And now knowing like, oh, I was supposed to like make this a whole marketing ploy and whatever, but I didn't do that. I just kind of like released it. Things that you learn when releasing your first game, I suppose.
I was going to say, did you run your backer kit with the H2 No expansion?
No, it came out after the campaign. So it was like on delivery, basically. I ran the campaign without the H2O No, and then halfway through the campaign, we unlocked the H2O No expansion by hitting a certain tier. What I now think about is, oh, that should have meant like I unlocked another campaign or something for me to run. But in the moment, I was like, okay, I unlocked a new thing that I now need to make before this game is done, which is so stupid thinking back, like, what a dumb idea. I mean, it was fun, and pressure makes diamonds. And so whenever I do that and I put myself in a situation where I need to come up with something and I need it tested and I need this, it ends up making like the coolest stuff that I ever make that way. And so H2O No really is kind of feels like the way I really like to play the game now. I mean, I love the original version. It's very straightforward. It's like this perfect little thing. And then you add the H2O No expansion and it just becomes chaos in such a fun way. And I really like it a lot. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Because the rules of it is basically you just place down the two tiles, move your dino, redraw, which I feel like is pretty straightforward. I mean, you got the special tiles and all that, and then, you know, watch out for the lava and just get to the raft. But how does the H2O change up gameplay?
It changes up gameplay because it adds in a bunch of water-themed tiles. So the main part that it adds in is geyser tiles and tar pits. And so those are tiles that you place on the board now. And now a geyser tile gives you an extra movement. So like kind of shoots you off into a direction. Whereas a tar pit tile sticks you there and you can't move for a turn. So it kind of is like, it adds into the movement of the whole game. And then there are, I think, 10 or so chaos is what I call them, chaos tiles. And those are like hurricanes that switch everybody's place in the game. Tornadoes that switch everybody's hands. Like really, like truly chaotic tiles that are shockingly, I can't stress this enough, they should completely break the game. Like on paper, these chaos things should make the game like so chaotic that it is just like, what is happening right now? But they don't. And it's, I don't know how, but they just make the game so much more fun. And maybe it's because there is so much chaos that there's always chaos to fight the chaos or something. But I don't know, for some reason, it works, and it works really, really well in a way that I wasn't expecting. I was expecting it to work, but need a lot more like tweaking here and there, but it really didn't need that much tweaking. And maybe that just is because of the simplicity of the base game, which was really important. I think that because of my specific situation of marketing a game to crocheters, I'm in a very, very unique position as far as a board game designer goes.
You already had a following.
Yeah, I had a following, and the games that I build need to work with that following specifically. So because of that, that's why I didn't release Stitched, where you can craft at the first one, because it's just too complicated for basically the non-gamer to pick up. And so this was my, I can feasibly see someone playing this game with their grandkid and enjoying it. And someone playing a game with their grandkid is such a specific gaming audience that is basically not gaming audience. Like it's just, you know, it's just not like what we normally see games for. I'm marketing it to old women.
It's more like a mass market person.
Yeah, it was just, it's a lot of fun to give myself parameters like that and try to still design something that I really, really am proud of. And I'm really proud of Lava Run for that reason. I think it kind of hits all those boxes of it's competitive, it's strategic, you can play it by yourself, you can play it cooperative, but it is not so simplistic that it is boring. I enjoy playing it over and over again, and it's always different.
When I got the package from you for the game, I didn't realize the little craftable dinos would be inside of it. My girlfriend was there and immediately took it as her own. I was like, okay, well, this is going to live at your place, I see. She's been crafting the little Triceratops.
That is so cool. I mean, that was kind of the part of the goal of this game, too, was like, okay, I'm going to make a game that people that already like to crochet a lot will get to play with their pieces that they already liked to crochet. Because that Triceratops, for example, is by far one of my most popular designs. I'd say it's probably in like one of the 20 most popular amigurumi designs online, because of it just hit at the perfect time and it just went viral. So a lot of people learned how to crochet using that Triceratops, which was like kind of part of, you know, it was like, oh, okay, well, you learned to crochet with that Triceratops. Here's a game I made where you can use that crochet that you designed. That was for the crochet audience. And then the other way around, it's kind of like the game feeds both sides, because anybody that likes board games might get this and be like, oh, there's this whole, I get crochet patterns with this, and there's this whole crafting aspect to it. Maybe I'll learn how to crochet. And I think it really has started to get a lot of people that might not have ever gotten into the crochet craft into it. At least I like to think that. Because of just like, it's simple. It's really not that complicated of designs. And, you know, I'm saying that as someone that's doing it for 20 years, but.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, I am notoriously terrible at any kind of fiber crafts, even though I want to get better at them. She's really good at knitting, but she is not really a crochet person. And I was like, okay, well, save me the Triceratops. It looks like it's the easiest. And she's like, so here's the thing. I already started it because they said it was the easiest one. I was like, damn it. I was like, I hope there's enough for another Triceratops.
There definitely should be. I make sure that any kind of kits that I make have enough materials to make a lot of them.
Oh, nice. In case you mess up the first one, which would be me.
It's a little bit of that, and also just a little bit of like getting some bang for your buck. Like with my design specifically, I designed such small projects that once you finish one, you get addicted to making them, and you're just like, I want to make another one right now. So it's really important to me to have enough materials so that you can do. I think that kit that she has, you can make 8.
Oh, heck yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of materials in there. And I specialize in these miniatures that are no-sew is what they're called in the crochet community, because you don't need to sew anything together, which is that's a completely separate design concept that I'll talk about on your fiber podcast when you have that.
Yeah, when I start a third podcast about a thing that I totally don't know anything about, that does sound like something I would get coerced into being a co-host of.
I could definitely see that.
That's so funny. So then what kind of playtesting did you end up doing for this game? It sounds like a lot of the initial ideas stuck with it, but who were you playing with? How did you decide to make it the way it is for that audience you were aiming for?
I'm fortunate enough to have a relatively decent community that is very active and always wants to test out little projects of mine. So it was pretty easy for me to find a pretty massive group of people that would be interested in testing. And what was important to me was that the people that were testing it were from a variety of different levels of where they are in the board game space. So luckily, the Venn diagram between crochet and board gamers is like almost, they are very close together. It pretty much, what I found actually by doing these craftable games is like nearly every single person that I know that is obsessed with board games either also is obsessed with the fiber art or has someone that is so close in their life that is extraordinarily obsessed with fiber arts.
I can see that. That's same with like rock climbing and plants. I'm like, exactly. What is going on here?
Yeah, totally. It's weird. It's just like these weird Venn diagrams just kind of like build on each other. Anyhow, so because of that, I had a pretty sizable audience that I could go to and say like, I'm looking for people that have never played a board game before. I'm looking for people that are super into board games and everyone in between. The way I tested it was because this was a craftable game, and this goes for all of my craftable games. They aren't just craftable games because you can craft the pieces for them. You can craft the entire project itself. So this game specifically has a whole craftable version of it where you can print out and play it. And I teach you how to print it all. And then obviously I teach you how to do all the crochet and stuff if you'd like to do that part as well. But because that was so inherently important for the final product, that was something I built really early on in part of the testing process of like, can you actually craft the game yourself first and then play the game? And then what do you think about that? So that was, I would say, probably the biggest arm of the testing came from that. And just a lot of feedback of like, oh, this felt overpowered, or like I held on to my asteroid the whole game. I never used it. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. Why? And how can I nudge things here and there? And then the other arm of the testing was I joined a pretty cool testing group here in Los Angeles. They're called First Play LA. I really love them. The whole community is just so, so cool. And some of the people that joined that are very seasoned board game designers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm so jealous.
I had no idea. When I came out with this game and going to these events, and still I go to this event and I'll talk to someone, and then afterwards they'll be like, oh, did you know that was the guy that designed this, this, this? And I was like, oh my God, yeah. I had no idea. I was talking to like a straight up a legend in the industry. But because that community is so willing to just help each other, which is, that is one thing, by the way, complete side tangent here. That is the one thing about this board game community that is so similar to the crochet community and that I love so, so much, is that y'all are so welcoming. It's funny because I say that to people and sometimes people are like, no, we're not. And I'm like, no, you are. Like, I came into this industry as like an outsider that had designed things, but everybody is so kind. Everybody wants to give you their feedback. Sometimes they want to give your feedback a little too much, but I appreciate it regardless because I'm someone that really likes criticism on my projects because it just makes them better. So anyhow, tangent over. I had a lot of people there that were able to kind of help me strip that game down to its core components even more so, in a way that made the game way more streamlined, way more fun. It wasn't that drastic of changes, but just little things here and there. I had one big person, it wasn't a tester that gave me strong feedback that changed the game so much, but it was a reviewer, which I didn't know he was a reviewer. Again, inexperience in the world. Found a bunch of people online that were board game influencers and stuff like that. And I reached out to all of them. I said, hey, I made this game. I really want feedback from someone that's used to giving feedback and stuff. Would you be interested? And so I shipped my game out to a bunch of them. I got very great feedback from 90% of them. But this one creator gave me the harshest feedback, which was they played it with their 12-year-old or maybe even younger kid. I think even younger. And this was a draft of the game. This was not the final version. And she didn't like the game because she felt you had to be too mean to each other. And I was like, and so his review was that this game is bad, straight up bad. And it's bad because my daughter said it's bad because she doesn't like being mean to people. And I've never played a game where I've been mean to another player. And I'm like, I don't know what games you play, but okay. But doesn't matter. The criticism was valid, even if it wasn't necessarily told to me in the nicest way, because it was told to me in a review online on day one of of like me announcing this game and stuff. But I was like, okay, pressure makes diamonds. Let's fix that for this person. And then that weekend, I just created the co-op version and the single player version of the game to make it so that there's options where if you are playing it with a little one that does not like to play competitively, there are those options there. And now, like, oh my God, that version of the game is so much fun, especially the single player. I thought, no way. I do not like to play board games by myself. I think that's like, the whole point is to play with other people, usually. Being forced to turn this into a single player game, it turned the game into like this weird like puzzle that you're building your own puzzle and you're also building like the things that you're trying to avoid. It was just so cool. I probably will reach out to this guy and say like, hey, I didn't love how you told me that criticism, but I will say your criticism did make me make a better game. So thank you. So yeah, I would say like, it's funny that all the testers that I played with, hundreds and hundreds of testers, not a single one of them gave me the feedback, this is too mean of a game. And I thought of all those people as like, oh, they're going to be really, harsh critics of this game or whatever. But the one person that gave me that feedback was like a 12-year-old kid. And it was very useful. you never know when you're going to get that kind of feedback that you might not want to hear, but you maybe need to hear it.
Yeah. How long do you think it took from that initial concept to being printed to people actually being able to play it?
So this is another weird part of my industry compared to the board game industry, because the board game industry goes, y'all go kind of slow.
That's fair. I'm sure you just like go, oh, I made this thing, make a video, done. Money, please.
Yeah, like, exactly. And so I designed this, I think I designed it in 2021. It might have been 2020. I released it officially 2025. I kind of really wanted to do it even sooner. I'm glad I didn't do it even sooner, but I just wanted to rush it because I didn't know about the industry. I didn't know how this works. The reason I wish I didn't necessarily do that, because I would have learned a lot about this, but you know, sometimes getting thrown into the deep end is what you need to learn the industry, especially with your like first official published product. But yeah, I would say probably was like 4 years of testing. And it was a lot of testing, but shockingly, all that testing, the game is still like 90% what it was when I made it that first night. I don't know. I go through these phases and I have a feeling that, again, like you, I'm sure have this feeling too. And I'm sure a lot of the other people, designers that listen to this podcast will feel the same way. There's sometimes when your muse just slaps. It's like, you don't know what it is, but sometimes they just come to you and they like kiss you on the forehead and then you can't ignore it. You just can't. And you just got to make it. And it's got to happen. And I think maybe it was either like this game or some other project of mine that made me realize the value of those moments that you can't fabricate them. I can't force myself into, I can't force my muse to come to me and tell me a great idea. But I can listen to her when she comes at me in the middle of the night while I'm trying to sleep and says, hey, what if you made a trading card game that's crocheted? And I'm like, okay, yep, I'm not sleeping tonight. I'm up and I'm writing all this down now. I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but.
No, I mean, it's totally fair. I look back at some of my games and a lot of them, that initial spark is majority of the game. Like Caution Signs was like that. That game came together so fast between Scott and I, and I think it was like around 2-ish weeks after the original prototype was made and tested that we got it signed. And it's just like crazy. Wow. Yeah, no, and the game came out like a year later, so, or maybe even less. Most of my games have come out in about a year from the idea to it being published.
Whoa. That you are rare. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that feels like a rare commodity.
No, I'm not normal, but it's one of those things that just like sometimes I can just like, I see the matrix and a lot of times will find a co-designer where it's like, hey, here's the vision, help me build it. And then we build it, or I do it myself. And then I just try to find the right partner. And I've been very, very lucky on just getting stuff signed. And sometimes things like jump the line as far as production goes, because I don't know, something just worked.
Sometimes it's just like, it, you know, that's the saying of the perfect place at the perfect time.
Yeah, stars aligned.
Yeah, stars align. And they don't just align with like who you meet or like who you talk to in certain situations. They come like, it's for little things like inspiration and like, you just perfect place, perfect time, even for that. I was driving the car and my partner was driving and I was able to write this down. Like that to me is a little bit of a perfect place, perfect time of I had the opportunity, the inspiration struck, and I was in the situation where I could jot it down and remember it instead of it just being a fart in the back of my brain.
Oh, yeah. No, I have two design journals, one for my day job and one for my freelancing. So I'm constantly writing things and doodling things. And if I don't put it in there because I don't have it with me, I put it in my notes on my phone and then I transfer them over later. So I can never forget something.
Do you ever fear that this creative influx will, like the spout will turn off?
Yes. When I had a concussion last year, it was very difficult for me to focus and design things. It was honestly, I had a moment where I like broke down crying, all because someone dropped their suitcase on my head coming back from Gen Con.
Oh my
God. Yeah, the overhead bin, they just like couldn't hold it or something and they got me in the head. I actually have a dent in my head now.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. That is crazy. Should you just like passed out and that and like woke up in a hospital bed?
I basically just like saw stars and he walked off. Like, everybody listening, make sure if any injury happens on the plane, the flight attendant knows, because I was dumb and walked off the plane and told the flight attendant or the person outside the plane, like who's at the desk, what happened, and they called an ambulance. Apparently things happen very differently in that scenario. So like I ended up paying all my own medical bills.
Oh God, you could have gotten a pay. You could be a millionaire right now.
I don't think a millionaire. Like, I don't think the guy meant to do it. I think he just like had weak arms and was dumb and just like left.
The airline would have paid you $1 million to just not be on the news.
Yeah, they're not liable is what I learned. So basically, yeah, I mean, the guy was like in the process of pulling it off. So it was 100% his fault. But no, in that scenario, I definitely got scared because I'm like, oh my God, my brain is not working. This is terrible. And it's bad because it makes you really wonder like, oh, is your creativity your self-worth? But then you think a little longer and you realize like, no, it's not. It's just a fun perk.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I so relate to you right now. That is just probably my greatest fear is probably Alzheimer's and just like forgetting who I was, and not because like of forgetting who I was, but I fear losing my creativity ever. Like, I just never want to take it for granted because it is, I mean, it's something I feed by participating in life and like going to concerts and reading books.
Yeah, I feel like keeping that creativity and hopefully our brains continue to work will be very ideal. But how did you decide that Lava Flow would be your first board game?
I decided Lava Room's going to be my first game because it just made a lot of sense to me. I originally wanted to have Stitched be my first game, but I talked to a few friends and they were like, listen, I love it. I love the fantasy aspect of it. By the way, in Stitched, you're controlling a team of goblins and orcs and ogres and stuff. So it has a very fantasy themed vibe to it all, but it's just too complicated. And it didn't have as much of like an approachable idea for a first game. And so I was kind of worried that, oh, my first game, I wasn't afraid that it would be successful, but I was afraid that it wasn't going to be as successful as I was kind of hoping it would be. So I thought, you know what, I should really release the one that I feel is going to have the most broad appeal first so that I can come out with something that a lot of people would see and like, and that would help hopefully the wave of coming out with more stuff in the future. So Lava Room just kind of felt like a no-brainer because it was about dinosaurs. I mean, everybody likes dinosaurs. It was simple enough, like 7 and up, a very simple design. It's very approachable, I think, is the best way to say it. And so it just felt like the right game to start with. I knew it was a good game. And because that Triceratops, or my dinosaur patterns in general, are some of my most popular designs, it also felt like a no-brainer for my community to jump onto a project that they already had all these designs for, and they already had a bunch of crocheted dinosaurs anyhow. So, you know, the stars just kind of made sense to say Lava Room was the first.
I think that's one of my favorite things that T-Turtle has started doing. They are a t-shirt company, I'm sure you've seen, with the cute animals that have funny sayings on it. And then now they do a lot of board games like Unstable Unicorns and beyond. And a lot of what they do with their new games is they base the design decisions and like what they're going to do it about off of t-shirt sales. So if something's spiking and everyone's like, we want an axolotl or we love dinosaurs, they're going to then create a game about dinosaurs. And so kind of doing that and mirroring it in a way without knowing that everyone's like obsessed with dinosaurs and that your Triceratops is like slapping and everyone wants it. And now you're like, oh, I'm gonna make a game about dinos. Totally makes sense. Like, you already know where the market is for your people and your audience. So why not create a game for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. It's interesting because my next one that I'm working on frantically right now, I'm going much, much more broad. And so I'm a little nervous about it, but I'm also not. I'm saying I'm nervous. I'm really just extraordinarily excited about this next project because it's just like, it's one of those no duh. Like, of course, why didn't I think about doing this sooner ideas?
Okay, well then what's the next project people should be looking out for?
So I've been wanting to come out with, publish a book for a really long time of my crochet designs. And I finally got the opportunity with a Penguin House subsidiary. I'm really excited. So they came to me and they were like, we want you to do a book of designs. And I said, okay, cool. I'm super into doing a crochet book. It's called Crochet Goomies. It's coming out in September. But I want this to be unique. I want it to be different than any other crochet book out there. And they're like, okay, well, what are your ideas for making it unique? I said, first, it's going to have 50 characters, which in the crochet world for a book is wild. That's like an encyclopedia of crochet characters. It's so much. Second, I wanted it to have a story. So it's got this whole story. There's lore behind each of the characters, which I thought was unique and interesting. And then, you know, you can crochet each of the characters. But the third most important thing is I wanted there to be a game. I want there to be a game for this that you can crochet any piece that you have and turn it into a piece in your game. And so all those things put together led me down to, I want to make a TCG. And it's not going to be a TCG. I say a TCG, it's going to be a CCG, which is a crocheable card game. You don't have to crochet your characters, but you can. And there's, it just allows me to turn my entire library of these designs that I'm coming out with so often. And each one of these can be a playable piece. So it just kind of like evolves what these games could be. And it's so cool. Oh, it's like, it started off pretty awesome. And then as of yesterday, I actually made a huge change to the game yesterday that makes it, I'm in that point. You know what I mean, Daniel. I'm at that point in the game design part where I'm just like so thoroughly excited about the project that I'm just like, I can't stop thinking about it. It's like the only thing I'm working on, the only thing I'm thinking about, even though I really need to come up with crochet patterns and this, that, and the other thing. But I'm just so excited to do all the graphic design and the photography and blah, blah, blah. So Battle Goomies is the name of the game. It's a card battler. It's a really strange concept because you use dice with it. I brought so many board game mechanics into this card game that I'm low-key a little worried that the TCG community doesn't like it as much because there are so many board game parts to it. And the only reason I say that is because when I went to Gamma and I talked about this game to people that were really in the trading card game world, they were like, I don't think your game's going to be good because ABC. And then I was like, oh boy, well, will you test it with me? And then I tested it with like, I think five different people on different occasions. And each one in their own way said, this was my favorite trading card game I played all of Gamma. And I was like, what? That's insane. Why? And they said, because it's not like any trading card game that they've ever played because I don't play. I mean, I played a lot of Pokemon when I was a kid. But I don't play Magic. Like, I learned them, of course, while I was making this game, but I'm not like obsessed with those. And I think the fact that I'm not obsessed with those allowed me to bring in mechanics that haven't been seen in card games before. The feedback that I've gotten so far is that it's a very unique trading card game. And it is still simple enough where a 7-year-old can pick it up and play the game, but a, you know, 30-something-year-old can have an extremely competitive match with their significant other. And it doesn't feel like a kid's game. And so that's exactly what I loved about Lava Run. So that's what I'm really excited about this one. And like I said, when I was a kid, I made card games. So I've kind of always wanted to make a TCG. And then the art is so freaking cool, Daniel. I'll send you some cards after this. I'm just really proud of my photography. I think that is the one skill this year that has evolved further than I thought. Like, I never thought photography was going to be the one thing that I was getting better and better at, but I was forced to learn photography for my book and not learn it.
Like, be better at it, I guess. Put in more time and effort into learning all the pieces exactly. of how to make a good photo. And lighting. Lighting's so important.
Exactly. Lighting and set up, and then making all these little props for it. It looks really, really, really cool. I've never really designed something so nice to stare at. I'm just really jazzed on it. I think it's a really cool idea. I think the book is great, but I think the game part is just so fun and something that the childhood Louis is like so, so stoked that this is what I'm spending my 2026 doing.
It's also cool because you can say, we're calling it a craftable trading game. So you can even say it slightly different. So people maybe don't have those biases of a trading card game. So they can approach it with like a different view and experience it the way you want them to with that joy versus being like, oh, I'm not going to try that because I like my core bit of knowledge of Magic or whatever. I'm also not a trading cards kind of person, but yours seems very cute and interesting. And I'm always like down to try new mechanics, especially if someone's trying to break the mold.
Yeah. I definitely think that at least in the card game world, it's breaking weird molds. I think this is the way that it's kind of different than other card games is you have a certain amount of cards and stuff that you're playing with, but you're not running through an entire deck very often. So it really does feel like a board game in a card game's universe, but still has the card game aspect where I would want new characters to play with or new items to add to my characters and stuff. And then the thing that I'm really excited about is the rarity part. So, like, obviously there's going to be rarities of these cards of, like, holographics and whatever. That's kind of a necessity when it comes to making a card game. But what I'm really excited about is I'm just thinking about myself when I was in elementary school. Trading Pokemon cards was, like, so freaking cool to me because I was like, oh my God, I have this really cool one. And I just thought, how cool would it be if, like, a 10-year-old goes to elementary school and brings their hand-crocheted Bigfoot Bobby, and there's nothing more rare than a one-of-a-kind hand-crocheted Bigfoot Bobby. Like, that is the rarest you can get. And trading that with their friend that crocheted their Zap the Jellyfish. And so I just think that the idea of crocheting or that of trading your crochet as part of the game is just so, it's just really exciting to me. It just, like, I know I'm going to be going to these events with my crochet. Hopefully, you know, who knows? Maybe this game will become very popular. I know it'll become popular in the crafting community because there's nothing really like it. So I know I'll be going to these, like, yarn events that I go to very often, and I'll be bringing my crochet, and I'm definitely going to be trading my crochet with other people's crochet because I think that is just such a fun idea. And I hope that one day I go to Gamma or something and someone's like, oh my gosh, would you trade crochet with me? And I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's the coolest. Yes. Yeah. It just feels like, it feels like a no duh idea and like just such a fun idea. And I've never been more excited about a project and so stressed about a project. Cause the other big part about this one is there's a tight, tight deadline on it because books come out and I can't stop the date that this book comes out. And it would be very silly of me not to come out with this game when the book comes out. So it was like you got to come out with this game at this time, which means it needs to be done by this time because you need to print and blah, blah, blah. So it's been very, I've had a few new friends. I'm finally collaborating with some other people to help me get this out into the world, not in the sense of design or anything, but in the sense of like production, the parts that I'm willing to let go of and I really don't want to mess with. So yeah, anyhow, sorry, I know I went on a spiel there, but I'm so excited about this game. And if anybody wants to check it out, goomies.com or thegoomies.com is the way to go with to find it. Goomies with two O's and an I.
Yeah, I mean, it seems really interesting, and I hope that you end up having that. And I like the idea that if you end up seeing people who create their own characters and you feel inspired to put them into the cards, I mean, what a fun feeling that would be.
Right? Oh my gosh, I know. And now I'm like talking to all my crochet peers in the influencer world, and I'm like, would you be interested in making a character for my game? And without fail, they're like, oh my God.
I'm sure everyone's like, yes. Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you want to?
Exactly. And then obviously, you know, there's tutorials and patterns for every character so you can make them in real life. And yeah, it's just cool. I'm really excited about it.
That's so exciting. And then to kind of backtrack to the game that we were talking about for the spotlight, was there like a favorite and a least favorite experience in working on that game?
I think my favorite part of working on that game was that my wife really liked it. I think that was really cool to me. She plays board games for sure, but the fact that like I made a game that she goes out of her way to want to play with me is very exciting, rather than, you know, playing Carcassonne again or Tarot or something like that. Anyhow, I really liked, I like that part of it. I think maybe the most fun part for was the night that I made it because it just changed, it really changed my life in a weird way of just perspective of what emotions are and control I have over my own emotions and my own creativity was really meant a lot to me. My least favorite part of the game was probably that feedback that I got, honestly. Like, I love feedback. I don't like harsh criticism without like kindness to it. That always just hurts.
I think there's a way to give it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that that's probably the hard part. And also, I think maybe actually the part that I disliked about it also was feeling for the first time in a long time that I was uneducated in a field. Because in the crochet world, I definitely feel like I know what I'm doing. Very much so. But in this board game world, I felt like a guppy and there's so many things that I don't know. And there's so many games I haven't played. And like people talk about distribution. I'm like, what the heck does this even mean? Like, I don't know how any of this stuff works. And so that both had like an exciting part of it, of just being like, wow, there's a lot to learn. And then, you know, the adult side of me is like, okay, cool. When are you ever going to learn this? You already just spent your entire adult career learning an industry. Now you want to go learn a new industry, Louis. Like, what are you doing? So I think that's like the fear of a new industry, but also like the excitement of coming to an industry and really feeling welcomed and not really expecting to feel welcomed was very cool. Everybody's been so kind to me, so like warm and welcoming, and for the most part, people really like it. So I think that's cool.
Aww. Well, that's amazing. I'm glad that that's the experience you've been continuing to have, and hopefully we'll continue to have beyond this recording of the podcast. As my last question, unrelated to all the things we've been chatting about, if there was a game that you didn't design that you wish you had designed, what would it be?
I really like games that are like oh my gosh, how the hell did no one think about this idea sooner? It's so simple, so easy. So I think that the one that came out recently that I've been really obsessed with is Flip 7. I really like Flip 7. And it's funny because it's like, I don't feel like it's a game that people like really, really like. But with my family, they don't play. We play the same card game called 31 every single year. And it's fine. It's a whatever game. Like, it's just kind of like a throwaway. But I brought Flip 7 to my family and they loved it so much. And everything about it felt so duh. I mean, my dad is a big blackjack fan in general. So it was kind of like an easy one for him to get to. But I think that's the one where I wish, I mean, jealous is the wrong word, but just like, the idea that someone even nowadays can come up with a simple, fun idea and turn it into a game that like no one's ever used before. I mean, people have used those mechanics, but never put them together in such a simplified way. And it's like, oh, wow, there's still things out there that are no duhs that still people haven't figured out. And or I don't know. It's just there's something about that game I really like. Also at Gamma, I played their new version, which is like, I don't know, Flip 7 something. And it was really, really fun. But I spilled someone else's beer all over all of their prototype cards. I felt so bad. Everybody was really cool about it. But like, so anybody out there that is on the Flip 7 team, I'm so sorry. I promise I'm going to buy multiple copies of the game to make up for messing up a prototype at a Gamma, but
was that the angry one? Oh my gosh, like, no, was it No Mercy? Or no, am I thinking Uno?
No, it is something like that. I don't think it's No Mercy, but it's like Flip 7 and it's like mean.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it's been very successful. I think it's always cool to see very streamlined card games. When you apply the right marketing and have the right mix of mechanics, it can do great. Well, cool. For everyone who's been listening, thank you again for joining us. This has been episode 147, Lava Run, of Game Design Unboxed. And Louis, for anyone trying to find you on, it sounds like quite a few different areas, where can you be reached?
I'm going to start with, if you have any feeling at all that you think you might want to learn how to crochet, please let me teach you how to crochet. I very much let me teach you how to crochet. My website's called Club Crochet. You can find it at clubcrochet.com. I have so many free, easy resources that'll teach you how to crochet. Feel free to reach out. You can reach out to me directly at louis@clubcrochet.com. But yeah, for anybody that's interested, please consider it. It is truly the best thing I've ever learned to do. And I do not think you will regret learning how to crochet. If you want to find me on social media personally, I'm Louis Loops, LouisLoops. I'm pretty much everywhere under that handle. And then my new game, Battle Goomies, is, you can just find it. Just if you search Goomies, Goomis, you'll find it. And if you would like to get Lava Run, lavarungame.com. But honestly, if you just Google Lava Run, you'll probably find it there as well.
Excellent. And then I've been your host. I'm Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on my personal social media, I've got that Instagram called Token Gamer, spelled GAYMER. And then, of course, Game Design Unboxed now has an Instagram and a TikTok with fun 1 or less minute clips so you can learn more about your favorite games. And of course, if you're also interested in me as a designer, I have my website, dmarcreativegroup.com, or check me out on Board Game Geek. But thank you so much for everyone who's been listening to this podcast and Louis coming onto it. This has been very fun. I love talking about other types of crafts. So this has been interesting for that reason and many others.
Dude, I cannot express to you enough how honored I am that you brought me onto this podcast. It really means so much. I'm like, legitimately, I'm getting like goosebumps right now thinking about the fact that I was like, it's a real honor. So thank you so much for having me, Danielle. It means a lot.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, inspiration to publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.